You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Mets your first listen every day. Locked On Mets is free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. Now, last year at the trade deadline, the Mets made a series of moves that ultimately did not pan out, and the fan base really did look at the deadline as an abject failure. Moving into 2023, a lot of the moves that were made are still going to impact the roster. So on the show today, we are going to discuss if the Mets front office believes in their trade deadline moves. In the first segment, obviously the biggest piece that will still be contributing this year, Daniel Vogelbach. Do they believe in him as the primary DH? In the second segment, we'll get to what was supposed to be the other half of a DH platoon. With Darren Ruff, will he be on the roster even come opening day? Then in the final segment, there was prospects that could have been moved that weren't. Why were they held on to? What's their future outlook? We'll get into that as well. Before we get to any of that, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter, at Finkelstein Ryan. You can also find some of my writing at justbaseball.com, where I work as the managing editor. Today's episode is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, the official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment matter more by visiting FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. Now, at the trade deadline, the New York Mets made a series of moves. First, they trade for Daniel Vogelbach. They get Michael Givens. They got Tyler Naquin. They get Darren Ruff. That was the totality of their deadline. They were active. They made a lot of different little maneuvers to try to round out the roster and be ready for a stretch run. And ultimately, they came up short. And I think there's a lot of fans that still blame the deadline for the results. Now, granted, those moves didn't work for a large, portion of what we were looking at when it came to the second half Mets. You know, there was a week when they first got these guys where I do remember Tyler Naquin had a multi-home run game. Darren Ruff got a big double at one point. We thought, oh, everything is working out. Vogelbach was great from the start. The offense took off. The Mets had that great run at the end of July that carried into August, where they were just winning nonstop series after series, game after game, and Vogelbach was in the center of a lot of it. And then there was a downturn where all of the hitters struggled. Givens was awful. You know, Vogelbach came back around at the end of the season, but it was looked at as an abject failure. Now you head into next season, and those two guys, Vogelbach and Ruff, are still on the roster. And Vogelbach, especially considering the lack of a big move to improve the offense, Nimmo coming back to keep it the same was amazing, but your big additions, so to speak, were Tommy Pham and Omar Narvaez to escalate the roster and make it better. Vogelbach, from July of last year, is still the biggest addition this offense has, but that's not all bad. This guy was actually really effective last year. If we boil it down his at-bats, you got to remove what he does against lefties because he got some run against lefties with the Pirates, and it dragged down his overall numbers. If you look at just his numbers against right-handed pitching, Daniel Vogelbach was a top 15 hitter in baseball last season. You look at the walk rate, 16.4%. That is elite. The strikeout rate, 24.7, not bad. He got on base at a .382 clip. He slugged .497, so his OPS was .879. Really good across the board. The big stat that allows me to say with certainty he was a top 15 hitter against right-handed pitching is his WRC+. This is an all-encompassing metric that measures hitters based on a league average of 100. It tells us how much better a hitter is compared to league average. So for Vogelbach, compared to league average against right-handed pitching, he had a 150 WRC+. He was 50% better than your league average hitter. That was identical to Jeff McNeil. That was ahead of guys like Jock Peterson, Nolan Arenado, Jose Altuve, Julio Rodriguez, Pete Alonso, Kyle Schwarber, Kyle Tucker. I mean, a lot of good hitters. And we are seeing that Vogelbach had a better WRC plus. A lot of that goes to the on-base percentage, because when you're getting on base at a 380 clip, that's going to move the needle a lot. 382, it was the 11th best OBP. You look at the slugging of 497, that is really solid as well. That put him in the top 25. He was 23rd with that slugging percentage. When you look at Daniel Vogelbach and you try to think about his role this season, he's your DH, he's your protection for Pete Alonso, and that is not the worst thing. The thing I'll say about Vogelbach, he's going to give you competitive at-bats, and he's going to draw his walks, which helps you as far as a lineup is concerned. You know, his walk rate the last couple of seasons, or really for his career, it's at 15.7%. You look at 2019, his best season with the Mariners, had 30 home runs, 16.5% walk rate, walked at a 14.7% clip in 2020, 16.7% in 2021, 15.8% combined. That's including the at-bats against left-handed pitching, all those numbers last season. And then with the Mets, he walked at an 18% clip. He hit 255, 393 on base, 436 slug. You want more slugging from Daniel Vogelbach. I think that is the one place that you could sort of nitpick his game. He had 18 home runs last season. If he was to go out and get the same 400, and he had 461 plate appearances, so let's just make it 450. If he gets that many plate appearances next year, can he go from, instead of being an 18 home run guy, being a 25 home run guy? Because if he, you know, adds that little bit of power, and instead of slugging at a, you know, 433 clip combined or a 436 clip with the Mets, if he could slug at more of a 470, 480 clip, and granted, with less run against left-handed pitching, naturally you're going to see way more pop. His slugging against lefties was abysmal. He just can't hit with power against left-handed pitching. If he can be, again, more of a 470, 480 slug with the on-base percentage still being, you know, well over 360, 370, you are going to get a player that is in the high 800s, low 900s in OPS, someone whose WRC plus will be high, and a real key cog in your lineup. I think that, you know, Vogelbach represents kind of the floor of this team, and I think that's what we're going to see with a lot of positions, whether it be Vogelbach at DH, Mark Canha in left field, Eduardo Escobar at third base. These are veteran pieces that you can plug in as starters and feel good about the fact that you're going to get slightly above MLB average production. Now, where the team could get better is if your prospects can push some of those veterans to the bench. But that is to be seen, and that's also to be talked about. We're going to get to that a little bit more in the final segment today. Before we do, though, I want to dive back into Darren Ruff. Does he have a role on this team, or is he destined to be cut or traded during spring training? We'll get to that in just a minute. First, though, again, today's episode is brought to you by FanDuel. The NFL playoffs are here. We're really excited about our new sports betting partner for Locked On, because they're the number one sports book in America. That is FanDuel. And if you're new to FanDuel, that's even better. They have so many great features that make betting on sports fun and easy. New customers can join today and get started with $150 in free bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. Just sign up at FanDuel.com/LockedOn. FanDuel has all your favorite bets, from the money line to the point spread to player props. Plus, you can even combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with a same game parlay, all on an app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use. So football fans, don't miss out. Place your first $5 bet to get $150 in free bets, win or lose, at FanDuel.com/LockedOn. Make every moment matter more with FanDuel, the official sportsbook partner of the NFL. Now, I really do believe the Mets front office has a lot of faith in Daniel Vogelbach. What I don't know is how much faith they have in their Darren Ruff addition. If we look at what they did, not what happened, what they did, it is a move that made sense during his tenure with the Giants. And we have to look just at that now, because I tried to find where Darren Ruff ranked among hitters in baseball against lefties from 2020 to 2022. And he was so atrocious with the Mets that it dragged his WRC plus down 17 points from 154 to 137. If it had been 154, we're in a completely different conversation with where he ranks among hitters in baseball against lefties. But again, he was awful with the Mets. Altogether, he hit 152, 216 on base, 197 slugging, did not homer, had a WRC plus of 24, means he was 76% worse than your league average hitter. He was almost worse, or almost worth a negative entire win. His F4 was negative 0.9. So just awful. He struck out 27% of the time, which is what he did with the Giants in the first half of the season. But there he walked at a 12.7% clip. So just completely different. His batting average fell off by, 64 points from where it was with the Giants. His on-base percentage, over 100 points, 112 points down from 328 to that 216. And his slug, which was already kind of down for him at 373, all the way down at 197. So almost a 200-point dip in slug. You look at his BABIP, batting average on balls put in play. It was 272 with the Giants, 208 with the Mets. There's not much else we can say than that this guy got completely in his head. He looked like a scared puppy dog out there in some of those post-game interviews. And you feel bad for him to a certain extent. You never want to see someone just look that uncomfortable. But it also makes you think this is hopeless a bit. And then you have to wonder where the Mets stand with this guy, because what they acquired, if you look at the 337 plate appearance sample size from 2020 through 2022 with the San Francisco Giants after he came over from the KBO, he got on base at a 380 clip against lefties. He slugged at a 557 clip, had a 937 OPS. He walked 13.9% of the time, struck out 22.3% of the time. And again, that weighted runs created plus was 154, complete difference than what he just did. And really, you had faith in the fact that he could put up production as a home run hitter against left-handed pitching. 22 homers, 14 doubles and a triple. So there was extra base hits there for him. I don't know what his role is, if he has a role in this team. But what I will say is the Mets could have cut bait with him. They could have non-tendered him. They could have tried to trade him somewhere, because at the end of the day, a $3 million salary is not difficult to move. If you had to eat some money on that, which is kind of crazy, you could have. You could have just cleared the roster spot. If you really wanted to, you could have found a way to get him off your books if there was no chance that he makes the opening day roster. The fact that he's still here, it tells me that to a certain extent, the Mets front office has a little bit of faith that Darren Ruff, with the normal offseason, with the full spring training with the guys, being comfortable and having Buck Showalter as someone that could build guys up, maybe you get him in a healthy competition in spring training and he finds something again. And he gets back to where he was in San Francisco, where he could thrive in that specified role. He has played a role on a 107-win 2021 Giants team, where he was in that more specified role. He does bring a little bit more to his toolkit than a player like Mark Vientos, because while he's not great in the outfield, you can stick him in left field once a week if you had to, if there's injuries that necessitate it, and he can survive out there. He can play a good first base, so it does give you a better backup first baseman defensively than a Mark Vientos would. And if you want to get the most out of Mark Vientos, having him in that limited role throughout the week, it's probably not the best thing for his development. You'll tank whatever trade value is left. You can make an argument, you can make a case, and if this guy can be who he was, he probably should break camp with the team. If Darren Ruff can flush what just happened, and he can get back to the guy that he was for 3 years in San Francisco, you can take that as the final member of your bench and say, all right, well, you got some coverage in the outfield with Tommy Pham anyway. Darren Ruff gives you another ancillary piece that can at least vaguely contribute. You have a backup first baseman now with Ruff that can get Pete off his feet and allow Pete to DH a little bit. You like that aspect of it. And you know, against left-handed pitching, maybe you're running, Pham into left field, and maybe you're giving Nimmo a day here and there. and you're putting, you know, Canna in center, maybe you are, I don't know, just mixing and matching and giving Pham some playing time against lefties and giving Ruff and seeing who really takes off in that role. I personally, if I had to guess how this thing goes, I see it going one of two directions. I either think he has a terrible spring and gets DFA'd, or I think he has a great spring and actually gets traded. I can really see Darren Ruff get moved after showing, all right, there's something left in the bat. Maybe it's a spring training type trade where another team is looking at their roster and they have a pitcher who doesn't have options that's not going to make their bullpen, that they have to push through waivers anyway. And it's like a one-for-one swap where you just basically trade pieces that don't fit on your roster anymore, that don't have optionality to them, and you swap them and you move on with your life and Darren Ruff is on a different team. But I also would not be surprised or shocked if the other scenario plays out where he has a good camp and they just put him on the roster. If no one else establishes themselves, I mean, you're looking at for that last roster spot, Brett Beatty, who I still think should get it. I think that having Brett Beatty as that third base left field option that can platoon with Escobar at third, that can take some time to DH, I think that's the best positional fit for this roster. And I think that he has shown enough that you can let him learn on the fly at the big league level. But the Mets might not want to do that. And if you don't do that, then it's basically Mark Vientos, Darren Ruff, Kalia Lee, all the minor league signings, whether it's Tim LeCastro. I don't know if they still have Terrence Gore. But, you know, Tim LeCastro, Abraham Almonte, Jose Peraza, all those different guys who are going to be in camp. One veteran has to break through if it's not Beatty or Vientos, and we don't believe it will be Alvarez. So could Darren Ruff be the best player of a bunch that, again, includes, you know, Kalia Lee, Abraham Almonte, Jose Peraza, Tim LeCastro? I mean, yes, I think he could be the best of that group that grabs the last roster spot. Will he spend the entire season with the Mets and play a great role? He was so bad that it's almost impossible to envision it, but you just never know. And the back of the baseball card for that 3-year sample size when he was in San Francisco suggests that he has some value in that specific role of hitting lefties. So we'll see if he can do it again. I think the front office isn't ready to just admit flatly that they were dead wrong on that trade. And so that's why they're going to roll him into camp and see what happens. But I guess to leave it at this, I'm not overly optimistic about what Darren Ruff can bring to the 2023 Mets. And personally, I'd probably prefer for them to go in another direction. Could it be a prospect? That's where we're going to close the show. Are the Mets, you know, still having belief and what they did at the deadline last year, or is there some buyer's remorse and maybe some non-seller's remorse on some prospects they could have sold to improve this team? We'll get to that in just a minute. First, though, today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. I don't know about you guys. I'm trying to lose a little bit of weight, all right? I got a wedding coming up a couple months from now, so I'm trying to get fit. And for me, the best way to keep my eating in check is to find solutions for me that are healthy but delicious, and that's where Built Bar comes into play. You got to try Built Bar because, for starters, comes covered in 100% real chocolate, so they can cure that craving for a candy bar because they taste that good with unbelievable flavors like the churro, the peanut butter brownie, or the coconut almond. These bars will maintain amazing macros while tasting like those candy bars. What's even better is they're healthy, only 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and a whopping 17 grams of protein. And now you don't have to wait around to get a box because for years we've been talking about ordering Built at Built.com. Now you can go to your local Walmart or Sam's Club and find Built Bar. All you got to do is head to your Walmart today, walk to the pharmacy section, and grab yourself a box of Built Bars. You can pick up a 4-bar box of the cookies and cream, the double chocolate, or the coconut puffs. Or if you're by Sam's Club, head in there. You can grab a 13-bar box with their hit flavors like the brownie batter or the churro. You can thank me later. Go to your local store and buy Built Bars today. Now, the last component to the Mets trade deadline is the fact that they held on to a lot of their major prospects. Obviously, there was some that were dealt out. You had a deal with Colin Holderman to acquire Daniel Vogelback. As I've reiterated many times in the past, if you're trading a reliever, it is what it is. You look at some of the other prospects, there was no one significant that went out. The Michael Givens trade, the trade for Darren Ruff, Tyler Naquin. Obviously, pieces were moved, and I think if you really wanted to do a whole show diving into what was sent out and we continue to follow it, granted, yeah, I think you'd want to have some of those trades back, but none of them compared to trading Pete Crow Armstrong for Javi Baez two deadlines ago. You know, the 2021 trade deadline when they sent out Pete Crow Armstrong to get Javi Baez and Trevor Williams, while Williams ended up playing a key role in the 2022 Mets, and Baez, granted, was great for the Mets in 2021. Pete Crow Armstrong is trying to be one of the best center field prospects in all of baseball. There's a lot of places that already have him as the best prospect in the Cubs system. I know for Just Baseball we have that. That's a massive loss to your farm, and I do think in some respects it created an environment where the front office right now is probably a little bit gun-shy of trading some of their top-tier guys. So you held on to Ronnie Mauricio and Mark Vientos. Now, what value do those guys have? Did they not have value on the trade market the same way that other prospects in baseball did? Could they have not gotten you a piece with control that helped you and you didn't want to trade those guys for rentals? I think that is ultimately what took place, but now you've gone through another offseason where Mark Vientos and Ronnie Mauricio don't have a clear future role on this team and they're still sticking around. Now, with I think Vientos, you're simply looking at the bat, and maybe that is limiting his value when it comes to trades because other teams are going to also see him as a DH kind of only or a first base DH only, and maybe that is what's prohibiting it. But I think the question remains, you know, the more that you hold on to him, how much more is that stock rising or falling? So this upcoming season, what's the plan with Mark Vientos? I think that either he is going to fill that last spot or he's going to end up in Syracuse, hopefully putting up big numbers to either be traded or to play a role at some point this season. When I look at what is left on this 40-man roster, though, I think the Mets were wise to hang on to these guys because I believe, based on what I think is some limited trade value for those two prospects in particular, the Mets believe that they have more value to the franchise as depth currently and high-end depth than being moved for potentially depth. And if you think about what would happen this year, and you never want to expect it, and Pete Alonso is one of the most durable players in the game, you still have to go into a season wondering, okay, if, God forbid, something happens at that position, what do we do? Mark Vientos is your answer. I think Ronnie Mauricio, after the winter that he had, you are hoping that he's still young enough that he can go into this season as the starting shortstop in Syracuse, be better at the position maybe, put up better numbers offensively, have better swing decisions, and get himself to a point where maybe that on-base percentage can tick up and maybe he can get it in the 320-330 range and he can slug over 500 and suddenly you're looking at an 850-ish OPS guy in AAA who's hit a bunch of bombs, maybe swipe some bags, and that could actually then finally become the piece that you move at the deadline. I think those two guys still represent the pieces that you would like to be able to move so you can hang on to the other guys that you really think will play big roles into your future. And that's Beatty, that's Alvarez, that's even Alex Ramirez, just positionally. So we'll see what happens with those two guys in particular. But I think the Mets are being careful to not sell a prospect that could have, if everything breaks right, all-star potential. And a lot would have to break right, but you can still dream, particularly based on power, on what Mauricio and Vientos can do at the big league level. That they are being smart, to hold those guys close to the vest and wait for the ideal trade. And if it comes up this season, well, maybe the Mets make a better deal now or a better deal in July this year than they ever could have in, you know, at the deadline last year. So the trade deadline for the Mets last season was not one that'll be remembered fondly, but there is a chance that based on what they didn't do last year and what they did do, that those moves that were made and the decisions that were made, trying to think about the future of the franchise while also thinking about the present of last season, I think they could actually make this team healthier moving forward and give them a longer window to contend and put them in a better position, particularly in the upcoming season. Anyway, that's going to be all for today's edition of Locked On Mets. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you follow, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you follow me on Twitter, at Finkelstein Ryan. Follow the show, at Locked On Mets. Thank you for making Locked On Mets your first listen every day. Now for your second listen, check out Locked On MLB Prospects, hosted by Lindsey Crosby. Locked On MLB Prospects is where you want to go to learn about the stars of tomorrow. You can follow Locked On MLB Prospects on the Odyssey app, YouTube, or wherever you get podcasts.